The parsha of Kisisa certainly is associated predominantly, I would say, with the Maaseh HaEgel, but actually there are a number of items that are mentioned and discussed in the beginning of the parsha before it gets to the Maaseh HaEgel. That's really why Rishon and Sheni are so long compared to the other aliyahs, so that the HaEgel will be done with within Cohen and Levi. No one should leave to a different shul on account of having been called up for the Chet HaEgel. And one of the items that are mentioned is Shabbos. He gets a good few psukim, and in fact the psukim of Vashomer of Bnei Yisrael, that's a Shabbos, which we say in Kiddush on Shabbos morning, and also in Davening on Shabbos morning, are to be found in this week's Parsha. But there's a pasuk of introduction, that's in pasuk Yud Beis, that is to say Yud Beis Yud Gimel, and let us see that pasuk. So Vayomer Hashem El Moshe Lemor, Yud Gimel, Va'ata Daber El Bnei Yisrael Lemor, speak to Bnei Yisrael and say, Aches Shabsosai Tishmoru, keep my Shabboses, if we were to try translate that into English. Ki Osi Bnei Yevenechem, and a number of Meforshim, of course, are interested in the fact that the Shabbos here is referred to or presented in the plural. Shabsosai, my Shabbosos. In every other setting, it's in the singular, whether it's the Aseres Adibros, Zohar is Yom HaShabbos Lekadsho, whether it's in a couple of psukim's time, Vishomer B'nei Yisrael Es HaShabbos, always in the singular. And yet, on this occasion, it is in the plural. Well, Al Derech HaPshat, the simplest level, the plural is still really means Shabbos. It's used in Lashon Rabbim because there are many Shabbosos. It comes once a week over the course of the year. There are a number of them. And therefore the Lashon Rabbim, the plural, is a reference to the Shabbosos of the year. That would not fully explain to us why in every other instance it is referred to B'Lashon Yachid. There are always a number of Shabbosos in the year, but there's always only one Shabbos at a time. So in a sense, it still seems somewhat inconsistent in terms of whether we will refer to it as the Shabbos or the Shabbosos. Okay. But a rather different approach, which is very thought-provoking, is to be found in the writings of Reb Velvel Soloveitchik Zatzal, the Brisker Rav. And in classic, one could say, Brisker style, he opens by noting that Shabbos actually has two aspects to it. Whenever Briskers look at anything, there are two aspects to it. And there are two aspects to Shabbos. What's it about? On the one hand, Shabbos, of course, is Zeichel Lemaaseh Bereishis. If we would be asked, I mean, what does Shabbos mean? What's it about? It's about commemorating Hashem created for 6 days and rested on the seventh day. But there's another element to Shabbos, and that is that somehow it is presented as Zeicher Liyetzias Mitzrayim. We say this in Kiddush on Friday night. We begin by saying Zikaron Lemaaseh Bereishis, which it is, and move on to say Zeicher Liyetzias Mitzrayim, Kuyom Techila LeMikrei Kodesh, Zeicher Liyetzias Mitzrayim. And the question is, in what way is Shabbos Zeicher Liyetzias Mitzrayim? Yomim Tovim or Zeicher Mitzrayim, Pesach Liyetzias Mitzrayim, and so on, things that when we came out of Mitzrayim. But how is Shabbos Zeicher Liyetzias Mitzrayim? We've noted in the past, actually, for the sake of broadening the possibilities, that there are those who say that in Kiddush we never say that Shabbos is Zeicher Liyetzias Mitzrayim. We say that Shabbos is Tchila LeMikra'i Kodesh Zeicher Liyetzias Mitzrayim. It is the first of the holy days, and they are Zeicher Liyetzias Mitzrayim. The reference is to Parshas Emor, Vayikra Perikav Gimel, where it introduces the Moadim, but mentions Shabbos first. And therefore, the way that the Kiddush is to be understood is that Shabbos is the first of the holy days to be mentioned, of Mikroi Kodesh, comes first. The Mikroi Kodesh was Zeicher Liyetzias Mitzrayim. However, Others understand that Shabbos itself is Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the truth is that these two elements really are represented in the two places where we have the Aseres Hadibros in the Torah. The first one in Parshas Yisro, which we had a few weeks ago, and the second in Chumash Devarim, Parshas Vayeschanan. For Shabbos, of course, is in the Aseres Hadibros, but it's mentioned somewhat differently between those two sets of Aseres Hadibros. Famously, of course, is the difference between Zohar and Shomer. In Yisro it's Zohar, in Aschan it's Shomer. But there are more differences than that. For whereas in Parshas Yisro, the background to Shabbos is Maase Bereishis. Right? Zohar is Yom HaShabbos Lekachiv, Kishesh is Yom HaSar Hashem, is Shemayim is Oretz, is Yom HaSkol Shabbam, Vayonach Vayom HaShivii, etc. That's in Parshas Yisro. But in Parshas Vayeschanan, it actually directs its attention to Yetzias Mitzrayim, the words of V'zacharta or V'zacharta, Ki'evet Hayisa Be'eretz Mitzrayim. Remember, you were slaves in Egypt, I took you out, and here is Shabbos. So the Torah itself is connecting Shabbos to Yetzias Mitzrayim. But the question is still there. How is Shabbos Eichel Yetzias Mitzrayim? And the Rambam, others following him, but the Rambam really discusses this in the Mor Nevuchim. And Rambam says that we know that Shabbos has a curious feature to it. Although its theme is universal, but its subjects are very specific. It's about the creation of the entire world, but it's not for the entire world. It is only for Bnei Yisrael, and that itself is very interesting. If the Yomim Tovim are only for Bnei Yisrael, so that we understand. I mean, how much can the Goyim talk about how difficult life was for them in Mitzrayim? And what it was like to receive the Torah at Har Sinai and sit in Sukkos. But they don't have Shabbos. And we talk about the V'lo Nesato, Hashem Elokeinu, L'goyei HaRotzos, only to Bnei Yisrael. And that means that in a sense, it was only Bnei Yisrael who were entrusted with the Shabbos. And that's what it means when it says, remember, you were slaves in Mitzrayim, I took you out, and with all that goes with that, meaning that's about the chosenness of Bnei Yisrael, and that's why I'm telling you to keep the Shabbos. So, there is a two-tiered message with regards to Shabbos. Number one, its theme is Zecher L'Maase Bereishis, but number two, we're mindful as the fact that only we are entrusted with commemorating that theme through Shabbos, that there's something about Bnei Yisrael, which is rooted in Yetzias Mitzrayim. These are the two elements of Shabbos. Now, what's interesting is, as we know, the first element of creation, Zecher L'Maase Bereishis, is only true for Shabbos. It's not shared by any other day. No other day really commemorates Maase Bereishis. But the second element of Shabbos, which is the chosenness of Bnei Yisrael, the unique connection that we have with Hashem as His people, that's not unique to Shabbos. That's not exclusive to Shabbos, because it's also shared by Yomim Tovim. So one of the elements of Shabbos is unique to Shabbos, and one of them is really true of all the holy days. And it's interesting to note that this has halachic implications. As we know, the mitzvah of tefillin applies throughout the day, throughout the week, the days of the week, but not on Shabbos. The source for that, although there's more than one opinion in the Gemara, but the classic source for this is actually in our Parsha, where it states in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Ki oshi b'ni uv'neichem nedor oseichem. The Shabbos is a sign between Hashem and us. And the Gemara states that tefillin are a sign, k'shatam la'os al yodecha. If you don't have the sign of Shabbos, then you have the mitzvah of the sign of tefillin. But if you have the sign of Shabbos, then it's not necessary or appropriate, or ultimately it's completely not relevant to have the mitzvah of tefillin, the sign of tefillin on Shabbos. That derives from this pasuk Yud Gimel, Yotza Shabbos Shehi Atzma Os. Now, Shabbos is not the only day where there's no mitzvah of tefillin. Also on Yom Tov there's no mitzvah. Some say even Chol HaMoed. What is the source of excluding Yom Tov? The answer, says Rashi in Maseches Eruvin and Daf Tzadik Vav, is this pasuk. Perek Lamed Aleph Pasuk Yud Gimel. Ki osi b'ni uv'neichem. Except this pasuk is talking about Shabbos. How does Yom Tov come in? But Rashi there says that Yom Tov in this respect is also like a Shabbos. Yom Tov in many aspects to it also has the designation of Shabbos. And therefore, says the Briska Rav, we understand in a new way why Shabbos was mentioned in the plural in this pasuk. Ach es Shabbos sai tishmoru. It's not a reference to the many Saturdays in the year that repeat themselves, but rather there are a number of types of Shabbos that are being referred to here. This pasuk, Ach es Shabbos sai tishmoru, refers to all types of Shabbos. That is to say, Shabbos and Yom Tov. And that's why the pasuk goes on to say, Ki osi beni uveneichem ledoraseichem. It's a sign, Ladas ki ani Hashem mikadishchem, that I am Hashem who sanctifies you. That's true for Shabbos, having chosen only us. And of course, Yom Tov is all about that. And therefore, in terms of the theme of the os, Shabbos and Yom Tov both share that, and that's why Shabbos is in the plural. What happens subsequent to that in pasuk Yudalit and onwards, Shabbos moves into the singular, because at that point it's only about what we call Shabbos. It's not about Yom Tov anymore. As the Pasuk Yudalit says, Ushmartim es HaShabbos, Mechalaleha mos yumas. There's a capital offense to do malacha on Shabbos. That's only true for Shabbos. And certainly as the Pasuk goes on in Tetvav, work for 6 days and resting on the seventh, that's clearly Shabbos alone. And that with that, the Briska Rav explains the transition from Shabbosos in the plural, the aspect that's shared by Shabbos and Yom Tov, to Shabbos in the singular, the element that is unique to Shabbos alone, Zecher Lema'aseh Bereishis. Now, it's interesting to note on this Pasuk, where it says, it concludes Pasuk Yud Gimel, it's Osi, Beni Uveneichem Ledoraseichem, it's a sign, Ladas, Ki Ani Hashem Mekadishchem, that I am Hashem who sanctifies you. What does that mean, Ani Hashem Mekadishchem? Well, on a simple level, we've already mentioned that it's about the sanctity of Bnei Yisrael, the Am Hashem, Hashem's a chosen people. But there's an interesting comment of the Mechilta on the words, Ladas ki Ani Hashem Mekadishchem, I am Hashem who sanctifies you, says the Mechilta, Ba'olam haba. That's what Ani Hashem Mekadishchem means. Ba'olam haba. And as the Malbim explains, what is being referred to here is the concept that I'm not sure that we're aware of another source in the Torah for it. We say that Shabbos is Me'ein Olam Haba. Me'ein Olam Haba, we say it in the Zmiris, and it's based on the Gemara and Brachas, that Shabbos is the 60th of Olam Haba. Does the Torah ever call Shabbos Me'ein Olam Haba? Here it does, says Malbim. Because part of Shabbos is in order to get a sense of Olam Haba. Ani Hashem Mekadishchem, Osi, it's a sign. It's not the real thing. It's not Olam Haba itself. That's something which cannot fully be experienced, understood, or apprehended while we are still in the Olam Hazeh. But nonetheless, a taste of what it's about, some aspect of that experience is yet to be found. It's a sign. Shabbos is an os for Mekadishchem Ba'olam Haba. However, the pasuk issues one proviso. Signs can be noted and signs can be ignored. That means it's possible to observe Shabbos and fulfill the mitzvahs of Shabbos, which are all obligatory and non-negotiable, but still not necessarily partake of this Me'ein Olam Haba. What does that depend on? Says the Malbim, that's why the Pasuk introduces by saying, Aches Shabbos HaTishmoru, keep the Shabbos, protect the Shabbos, look after it, develop it, and open it up for that aspect of Me'ein Olam Haba. Lishmoras HaShabbos, when we think of Lishmoras HaShabbos, we think of Shabbos observance, not doing anything that one shouldn't do on Shabbos, which is 100% correct. But there's a higher element of Shmiras Shabbos, of guarding the Shabbos, of protecting and of trying to tap into that experience of Me'ein Olam Haba. That's up to the person. Achesh HaShabbos, so it's like Tishmoru, you'll see Me'ein Olam Haba. We're mindful of a comment we mentioned on a number of occasions from the Shemi Shmuel of Sokachov, where the Gemara states in Masechah Shabbos and Daf Kuf Yud Tes, Kol Ma'aniges HaShabbos, anyone who delights in Shabbos, Nos Nimlo, Kol Mishalos Libo. They give him all of his heart's desires. That sounds very appealing. Nos Nimlo, Kol Mishalos Libo. Well, says the Shemi Shmuel, do we see that? Do we see that everyone has all their heart's desires fulfilled if they keep Shabbos? There's a lot of people that keep Shabbos. They're still waiting for all their heart's desires to be fulfilled. And in some cases, it's probably not a good thing for all their heart's desires to be fulfilled. But the Shemi Shmuel notes that the Gemara doesn't say all of his heart's desires are fulfilled, because to fulfill one's heart's desires is lemalos, literally, as we would say, lemalos is to fulfill, like we say in Kiddush HaChodesh, Chaim sheyimalo mishalos libeinu letova. That's one's heart's desires fulfilled. The Gemara doesn't say that, and that's probably even not such a good thing. Rather, it says, nos nimlo kol mishalos libo. They give him his heart's desires. And what that means is that it's often true that through the course of the week, we get worn down, and perhaps our vision gets reduced, and we don't necessarily want the things that we should be wanting. Perhaps, and by the time we get to Tuesday or Wednesday, what do we want? We want a raise, an office with a window overlooking, and a place on the board, etc., and another car, and someone else's car. And by the time it gets to Thursday or Friday, perhaps all we just want is to get through Thursday and Friday. And then we get to Shabbos. And part of what Shabbos, the rehabilitation of Shabbos, just that day to recalibrate, is to remind ourselves what we really should be wanting. And that's what the Gemara says, that if a person connects with Shabbos, he'll leave Shabbos with a new wish list of things that are more content-filled and more meaningful. That's a good way to enter back into the week. That's the challenge of Ach Es Shabso Sai Tishmo. So, from there, we move really to, as we said, the heart of the parsha, which is the Chet HaEgel, and there's, of course, an enormous amount to discuss about it, but I'd like to just take a classic line through this section, and that is the comments of the Ramban. And everyone wants to know, what happened? I mean, how could it be that left Mitzrayim, Moshe went missing, and before you look around, idolatry. And that's what it sounds like. So, Ramban is emphatic on the point that when we talk about the Chet HaEgel, you really need to distinguish between the Egel as it began and the Egel as it ended up. The beginning and the end were not the same thing. That is to say, the original request for an Egel or whatever it was, they never formally requested an Egel came out, but that's clearly something along the lines of what they wanted. That was not for purposes of Avodah Zarah, not at the outset. And we can see that very clearly in the Pasuk, because in the beginning of Perek Lamed Beis, just a few psukim later, Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Aleph, Vayar Ha'am, Kiboshesh Moshe Laredes Menahar, they see that Moshe is tarrying, not coming back, seemingly. Vayikahel Amal Aaron, they assemble around Aaron, Vayomer Elav, Kum Aseilanu Elohim. Now we're going to have to leave the word Elohim untranslated just for the moment. But Asher Chulefaneinu, that will go before us. Why? Why do we want that? Ki ze Moshe ish Asher Elanu Meretz Mitzrayim Lo Yadanu Mehayalo. Moshe took us out. We don't know where he is. So, what we see from that pasuk, in their own words, I mean, this is their request to Aaron, is that they're asking for something because Moshe's gone missing. That means whatever they're asking for is a replacement for Moshe, not a replacement for Hashem. They're looking for something to fill Moshe's role. And That's why they say Aseilanu Elohim, and here we may say that Elohim refers to a type of a force or an important entity, Asheil Chulufanenu, that will go before us, that will guide us, in the same way that Moshe until this point was guiding us. So this object or item will guide us. Now, as soon as there's a shift from a human being to an object, there is a hazard. That is not yet Avodah Zarah, but it could be Avodah Zarah. It's easier to do that with an object. It's possible with a person also, but it's easier to do that with an object. As if to say, the notion that an certain item can act in a certain capacity, I mean, that's life. And that's not yet Avodah Zarah. The Avodah Zarah is to ascribe to it independent will, and that it could react to if you petition it. That's Avodah Zarah. As if to say, perhaps not to oversimplify, the classic Avodah Zarah is sun worship. And that's absolutely off limits, because you can't worship the sun, but the sun does things. The sun causes plants to grow. The sun dries raisins. So if you call a raisin sun dried, that's not Avodah Zarah. The sun did it. It's Avodah Zarah if you think that if you ask the sun nicely, it will dry the raisins quicker. And that's Avodah Zarah, at the risk of reducing it to its simplest distinction. And therefore, whenever there's an object, so it's possible to see this as an agent, without its own will and etc. And that's a fact of life. It could become Avodah Zarah if one begins to ascribe to it its own decision-making and etc. and so forth. And then it becomes the object of worship. So it's delicate at this point, but it's not Avodah Zarah yet. Aaron produces for them an egel. In Pasuk Dalet, Vayikach miyodam, Vayotso osa bacheret, he puts it in this mold or form, Vayaseu egel masecha, becomes an egel. Why an egel? It seems from the simple reading of the Pasuk that there was a move to make an egel specifically. It didn't just, could have been anything, it came out an egel. What's the significance of that? So Ramban explains, based on the words of Chazal, that an egel was the appropriate item here. If there was no appropriate item, but if there was, what they were looking for was an egel. And the reason why is because they're currently in the desert. The desert is a place of din. It's a place of din, it's unforgiving, the desert. There's no free lunch in the desert. All you have is what you take with you. That's Midas Hadin. And therefore, they understand that they will be guided through the desert using Midas Hadin. Interestingly, until now, as far as they're concerned, they don't know if he's ever coming back, it was Moshe that was guiding them. Moshe himself actually is a Midas Hadin personality. And he was the judge. He's always compared in that way to Aaron. Aaron is chesed, ish chasidecha, Moshe is din. Moshe is quoted in the Gemara as saying, Yikov hadin esahar, let judgment pierce through a mountain, come what may, justice is blind. That's Moshe, whereas Aaron is Oev Shalom, Verodev Shalom, and there's room for both of them. They're Moshe and Aaron. They become the prototypes of Hillel and Shammai. And that's what they need to get them through the desert, a place of din. You need a personality of din. So Moshe is the guide through the Midbar. Ramban further notes that din is always associated with the left side. As we may have encountered that in the past, the right and the left are always chesed and gevura, chesed and din. And therefore, we're talking in formula at the moment, but the Jewish people, they need something from the left side in order to help them in their Midas Hadin situation. Well, what's on the left side? And the left side of what? In the Navi Yechezkel, in Perek Aleph, what's called the Maaseh Merkava, it's the Daf Torah for Shavuos morning, it describes the Kisei HaKavod, and it describes four sides, and there was a different depiction on each side. And on the left side, there was the image of a shore, of an ox. And Chazal and the Medrash make many associations between the egel, essentially an expression of this ox. The Pasuk says, Vayamuris kavodam betavnis shor. The Pasuk in Tehillim refers to them as basically having made an ox. Now we know they made a calf, an egel, but the egel is the son of the ox, which means there's an emanation yet from that left side of the Kiseh HaKavod, and from their point of view, that's what they need now. They need Midas Hadin guidance. Well, then they say, and we see that things are moving closer and closer to problematic areas, because in Pasuk Dalet, which we began to quote from, Vayikach Meyadam, Vayotzer Sebacheret Vayaseu Egel Maseicha, so it comes out an Egel, Vayomru, and they say, we don't know who they are. Pasuk doesn't say who they are. Rashi says it's the Erev Rav, because they say, Eile Elohecha Yisrael Asher He'elucha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. These are your Elohim, Yisrael, who took you out of Mitzrayim. That's why Rashi says it's the Erev Rav, because if it's the Jewish people, they would say, Asher He'elanu Me'eretz Mitzrayim, who took us out. But Asher He'elucha is another group, and they're very active in this way, and somewhat agitative, and not helping at all in terms of maintaining the purity of perspective here. But to say Eile Elohecha Yisrael is now very difficult. They said Kum Aseilanu Elohim, but that's a force. But is it its own force, or is it an executive force from that Hashem is acting through? That's ambiguous. But as soon as you begin to ascribe Yetzias Mitzrayim to this force, it sounds like you're giving it independent power and capacities. And that is a problem. And that's why Aaron calls a stop to it at this point. They're just getting into it. They're just getting started. Aaron says at that point, Pasuk, hey, vayar Aaron. Aaron sees. Pasuk doesn't say what he sees. Many of these psukim are kind of open-ended in that way. Doesn't say what he sees. But Ramban says he saw what was happening. I mean, he saw where things could be leading. And therefore, Vayiven Mizbeach Lefanav, he builds a Mizbeach, which actually took its own long time. Vayikra Aaron Vayomar Chag Lashem Machar. Aaron tells everyone to come back tomorrow. He wants them to cool off, because he sees that in this initial moment of excitement, things could deteriorate rapidly. He wants them to go home, come back. But what he says is Chag Lashem Machar. And that is absolutely emphasizing for them that if there's a chag, and if this is the way it's going to be, and so the chag tomorrow is for Hashem. No Avodah Zarah is ever called Hashem. It's ever called Yudke Vavke. It will always have its own name. It's different. That's the point. But Aaron is saying nothing other than chag Lashem is acceptable. Go home, think about it, and we'll start again tomorrow on the right foot. And the morrow is the problematic time. Because, as the Pasuk states, Pasuk Vav, Vayashkimu Mimachras, they got up early the next day, they're getting up early, it's already not a good sign. Vayashkimu Mimachras, Vayalu Olus, Vayagishu Shlamim, they begin to offer korbanos, and it's already, they didn't heed Aaron's message. They're not relating to this as Chag Lashem Machar. It's already at this point become Avodah Zarah. There's no preservation of this all-important distinction of this as an agent or a vehicle through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu can communicate with them, as opposed to a deity in its own right. And in a sense, we can see the difference between day one and day two in Pasuk Zion, which follows immediately. And for Pasuk Zion states, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe, Lech Reid, go. And Lech Reid is really a redundant expression. If you're on a mountain, Lech means raid. And you can't go without going down. So Lech Reid really means quickly. There's no time is of the essence. Why? Kishiches Amcha, Asher Eleisem is Mitzrayim, they've acted destructively. That's a message on day two. There was no message to Moshe on day one to go down. Hashem never said to Moshe on day one, Leich Reid, Kishi Ches Amcha, look what they're doing, it's terrible. Apparently, day one could yet have been salvaged, could yet have had a good outcome. Day two is when things deteriorate beyond any form of acceptability, and that's the point when Hashem says to Moshe, right now, they've destroyed everything. Kishi Ches Amcha. And this gives us a different understanding for a number of the psukim later on in Pasuk Kaf Beis, when Moshe meets Aaron and Moshe says, you know, what happened? What do they do to you? Pasuk Kaf Aleph, Ayom Moshe Aaron, Me Asalach Ala Amaseh Ki Evesa Alav Chatar Gadola. What did they do? How could you lead them to Avodah Zarah? And Aaron responds in Pasuk Kaf Beis, Vayomer Aaron, Al Yicha Af Adoni, don't be angry. Don't be angry. But Ramban asks, well, why not? It's Avodah Zarah. What are you going to get angry about if not Avodah Zarah? Al Yicha Af Adoni. He asks not to be angry. But rather, Ramban explains that Aaron is looking to explain to him how it didn't start out that way. Don't be angry. Don't think that from the outset everybody came, they want Avodah Zarah. No, it started in a way that could yet have had a good outcome, but in the end it deteriorated. So this is a very important parshanut point. There's of course many, many details with regards to the Egel and other aspects, but just this understanding of how it began and how it ended, as he demonstrates through the Psukim. And I think perhaps it is worthwhile noting that the punishment for the Chet HaEgel is very specific. Hashem says to Moshe, when Moshe asks for forgiveness, in Pasuk Lamed Dalet, if we take a look there, Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Lamed Dalet, so Moshe has asked for forgiveness, and is it yes or no? Will they be forgiven or not? Pasuk Lamed Dalet, Va'ata, Hashem says to Moshe, Leich Necheya Sa'am, go, continue, lead them, Elasha Dibartilach, to the place that I spoke to you about. Hine Malachi Yelech Lefanecha, my emissary will go before you, my Malach. Uviyom Pati Ufakadati Aleim Chatosam. On a day that I visit them, I will visit them with this as well. Uviyom Pati, there'll be another day, and then this will come back. Which means that the full punishment for the Egel didn't happen there and then. It seems to have been like a slow release over time. On other occasions, they'll be visited with the Egel. And what that means, and the Gemara says this in Maseches Sanhedrin and Daf Kuf Gimel, that every generation tastes something of the Egel. That means that if they do something else wrong, Uviyom Pokti, when I visit them for that, then Pokadati Aleim Avonam, so that I will visit them for this as well. As if to say that it's always like a follow-up to some other visitation, some other punishment, then becomes a punishment at the end for the Chet HaEgel. And it's a very interesting kind of way of this punishment happening. And I wonder perhaps, pardon me? So perhaps we may say that it's really its own type of midah keneged midah, in keeping with the nature of the Chet HaEgel itself, as if to say that the sin of the Egel, it didn't begin as an Aveira. It began as something that could have been legitimate. It became an Aveira. It deteriorated into an Aveira. And therefore, perhaps for that reason, the punishment for the Egel never really starts as the punishment for the Egel. It's something else, and then deteriorates into the punishment for the Egel. I'd like to turn our attention now to a section which has relevance beyond the parsha of Kisisa, and that is the Yud Gimel Midos, the 13 attributes of mercy. And they're to be found in Perek Lamed Dalet, Pasuk Vav. And as we will see, there are a number of questions that are rooted in Parshanut, and then extend beyond there. And we begin at the beginning of Pasuk Vav, Vayavor Hashem Apanav Vayikra. Hashem passed by his face, that's Moshe, Vayikra, and he called. And here we have our first question, who called? As it goes on to say, Hashem, Hashem, Kerach Lemachana. If the content of the calling is Hashem, Hashem, Kerach Lemachanun, so that sounds like it's someone other than Hashem who's doing the calling. But on the other hand, contextually, Vayavor Hashem al panav vayikra, because Hashem and Moshe are both in the pasuk, difficult to know. Is it the subject? Is it the object? According to most Meforshim, it's Hashem who called. Vayavor Hashem al panav vayikra means Hashem called out. And what he's doing is he's not calling to himself, but rather he's calling out the midos, the Yud Gimel Midos. And this seems to be borne out, number one, from the Gemara, and number two, elsewhere in the Chumash. There's a famous statement in the Gemara, Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Zayin, with regards to the Yud Gimel Midos. Rabbi Yochanan says, Melamed shenis atef HaKadosh Baruch Hu kishliat tzibur. We see from here that Hashem, so to speak, wrapped himself up like a shliat tzibur and said, Kol zman shi Yisrael chotim, whenever the Jewish people will sin, yasu lefonai keseder hazeh, they should perform this seder, the Yud Gimel Midos, v'ani mocha lahem, and I will forgive them. So we see from the Gemara that HaKadosh Baruch Hu led by example, he was the chazan, so to speak. And Rabbi Yochanan prefaces by saying, had the pasuk not said it, we could never say it. Because what a thing to say, Hashem became the chazan for the Yud Gimel Midos. And we say, had Rabbi Yochanan not said it, we could never have said that the pasuk is saying it. But we see, according to the Gemara, it's Hashem who is doing the calling. And moreover, later on in the Torah, in Chumash Bamidbar, in Parsha Shelach, after the episode with the Meraglim, Moshe recalls the Yud Gimel Midos, and he mentions some of them, six or seven of them, in response to the Meraglim. And he begins by saying, Va'ata yigdal na koach Hashem, kasher dibarta lemor. So this is Moshe talking to Hashem, and now do perform as you said, lemor, Hashem kerachem mechana. He doesn't mention all of the midos, but he's certainly drawing on the episode of the Yud Gimel Midos. And Moshe says to Hashem, that's what you said. So it seems clearly from that pasuk that it's Hashem who is doing the calling. That's the opinion of most Meforshim. But we should note that, for the sake of Shlemus, one of the Targumim, the Targum Yerushalmi, actually states that Vayavor Hashem apanav, Hashem passed by Moshe, Vayikra, and Moshe called out Hashem Hashem kerachem mechanan. So that those are two possibilities there. And what was called out, as the pasuk reads, begins Hashem Hashem kerachem mechanan, as we know, begins by two mentionings of Hashem's name. And the Gemara, again, in Maseches Rosh Hashanah there, comments on the two mentionings. Hashem, Hashem, I mean, whatever's in the first one is in the second one. How are these, what's behind the repetition? And the Gemara states famously, Ani Hashem, kodem sheyechta Adam, I'm there for him before he does anything wrong. Vani hu la'achar sheyechta v'yaseh tshuva, I'm there for him afterwards. Does tshuva, I'll still have rachmanus on him. So Hashem is before and after. That's what's denoted by those two references. And interestingly, the Rosh, in his commentary to Maseches Rosh Hashanah, raises a simple question. Before a person sinned, presumably, he doesn't need rachamim. He hasn't done anything wrong. Now this Yud Gimel Midos Sherachamim are in response to sin. So after if he's done an Aveira, so then he'll take whatever he can get, all 13 if necessary. But the first one, before he's done an Aveira, so that's a good time. So why, Hashem is the name of Rachamim, but why should he need Rachamim if he hasn't done anything wrong yet? That's the question of the Rosh. And he gives a couple of answers, and one of them is that Hashem knows that he's going to do an Avera. He's on his way. He knows it will happen. And therefore, there could be room to say that he should be stopped, or he's going to do something wrong. But Hashem has rachmanus on him in advance. He leaves him and is patient with him, allows him to make that mistake, if that's what he chooses, but then he's got to repair it. And that's Hashem la'acha shi'echta adam. So that's the first answer of the Rosh, that a person sometimes does need rachamim before he's done something wrong, if he's going to do something wrong. He needs rachamim that things are not terminated for him prior to the thing that he is about to do. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh, who quotes the question of the Rosh, has a more general approach and states that rachamim is compassion and mercy, not necessarily in response to doing something wrong. In the tshuva experience, I mean, tshuva doesn't exist if a person hasn't done something wrong. So when we think of rachamim, we think of have compassion in spite of the fact that it's about repairing and fixing things. But the truth is that even if no one did anything wrong, everyone needs rachamim. Rachamim isn't always because someone's done something wrong. It's interesting that we say in Ashrei, v'rachamav akol ma'asa, tov Hashem lakol v'rachamav akol ma'asa, Hashem is rachamim on everything. But not, and akol ma'asav means every living thing. It doesn't just mean every person, every living thing. But there are living things that are not capable of sinning. But apparently everything needs rachamim. The famous episode in the Gemara in the Bar Mitzvah in the seventh perek, where it was Rebbe Yehuda Anossi. There were some small creatures in the house, and the cleaner was about to kind of shoo them out and do whatever with them, and Rebbe told her to be a bit more patient with them. Or v'racham aval kol ma'asav. He quoted the pasuk there. V'racham aval kol ma'asav. That means the kol ma'asav refers to any living thing. So everything needs rachamim, regardless of whether or not it's done something wrong. And that's the first Hashem. So the first Hashem is pure rachamim, not sin generated or related. The rest of them are about if a person does something wrong. What we do see, however, however you address this question, is that these first two names are the first of the two middos. Hashem, Hashem, before and after. That's number one and two. That is the reckoning of Rabbeinu Tam, and I believe it's probably the most well-known of the listings of the Yud Gimel middos. Numbers one and two are the first two names of Hashem. Hashem, Hashem, before and after. However, an earlier authority is cited by the Rishonim, and that is Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon of the Gaonim, the time of the Gaonim. And he has a different count, and he is of the opinion that the first name is not one of the middos. The middos begin with the second. According to Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon, the way to read the pasuk is that the first name is actually still descriptive, as if to say, Vayavor Hashem apanav, Vayikra Hashem. And Hashem called. And what did he call? Quote, Hashem kerachem v'chanun. So the first name Hashem is not the contents of the calling, but it's yet the one who's doing the calling. Which, of course, seals the parshanut for Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon. Clearly, he's like most meforshim that understand that it's Hashem doing the calling. According to Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon, that's explicit in the pasuk that it's Hashem doing the calling. That's the first name. And he cites as support for this approach the fact that if you look in the pasuk, when it says, Vayikra Hashem Hashem, in between those two names of Hashem is a vertical line. And Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon says, that's a pause. And the reason why it's a pause is because it's the difference between Hashem as the calling as opposed to the contents of what he called. So that line is to break between these two names, Vayikra Hashem, line, and what did he say? Hashem kel rachum v'chanu. Now, that's okay, but there is a conservation of matter, so to speak. Namely, There are 13 midos of rachamim, that's for sure, that's clear in the Gemara. Most people see these first two names as numbers 1 and 2. If you are a Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon, and you see that the first name is not really a midah, and number 1 is the second Shem Hashem, so then you're missing a midah. So where is number 13? So Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon says, in Pasuk Zion, it says, Notzer chesed lo'alafim. Hashem keeps, preserves kindness for thousands. And Rabbi Nissim Gaon says, those are two middos. Number one, Notzer chesed at all is a middah. The idea of the merits of a generation helping a later generation, that itself is a midah, it's a chiddush. Even if it would only be for one generation, that's a chiddush. A midah of ches, a kindness. And the fact that it's la'alofim is a separate midah. That is Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon's analysis. Notes of chesed and la'alofim are two separate midahs. But the position of Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon is taken issue with by the Rosh. The Rosh is in league with Rabbeinu Tam, that the first two names are indeed midos, and he disputes the position of Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon for a number of reasons. Firstly, three reasons in fact. Firstly, the Rosh says, according to Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon, the first name is to tell you that it's Hashem doing the calling. Says the Rosh, the Pasuk doesn't need to say that it's Hashem doing the calling. I mean, it's clear in the Pasuk, Vayavor Hashem apanav vayikra. You don't need to just repeat Hashem's name in order to tell you that. It's clearly already part of the contents of the calling. It's a midah. So that's a very interesting position of the Rosh, because as we've already seen, there are those who actually say that it wasn't Hashem doing the calling. The Targum Yerushalmi says it was Moshe. But the Rosh is clearly on the side of those who say it was Hashem doing the calling. Not only does he understand the Pasuk that way, but it's so obvious that you don't even need the Pasuk to say Hashem's name again in order to state that. It must be a midah already. That's number one. So that's a very firmly held parshanut stance. Number two, says Rosh, with regard to Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon's split of the two midas, Notzer Chesed and La'alofim. And Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon said, two chidushim, the very fact that Hashem preserves kindness for later generations is itself a chiddush, even if it's for only one generation. And what's more, that it's for thousands. That's the second midah. Says the Rosh, that's not a midah of chesed, that Hashem preserves good acts for later generations. We see that the same is true even for wrong acts. As the pasuk goes on to say, for averus, the pasuk goes on to say, Poked avon avos habonim al bnei banim al shileshim varabeim. Even sins can be preserved for some generations. So, and that's not an act of kindness. And therefore, apparently, that's just the way that it works, is that for a certain amount of time, acts will have their repercussions, for good and for bad. But if it's true for bad, then it's just apparent, that's just the reality. It doesn't represent a special kindness, if it would be equally true for bad. The only kindness is that it's one midah, and whereas for bad, it's for four generations, for good, it's for thousands. And therefore, he refuses to accept Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon's split of Notzer Chesed and La'alofim into two. And finally, and this is fascinating, the Rosh's third question comes from what he calls Minhaka Olam. What does the Olam do? And what is that a reference to? We mention the 13 midos of Rachamim often, Semi Tshuva, Ta'anis Tzibur, etc. So the Rosh says, the widespread custom, and he's not aware of any other custom, is that what happens? The chazan leads in by Avor Hashem Apanav Vayikra, and everybody then starts. Hashem Hashem Karachem Vachana. Says the Rosh, but according to Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon, the chazan is stopping one word too short. He should really introduce by saying, Vayavor Hashem Apanav Vayikra Hashem. And then everyone should begin. Hashem karachem v'chan. But it's not that way. And this is the Rosh's question from Minhag Olam, which is interesting, because really what he's saying is, everybody does it, and if that's what everybody does, clearly that's because that is how it's meant to be. That's an indication that the midas begin. So it's the Olam versus Rabbeinu Nissim Gon. None of the Olam are equal to Rabbeinu Nissim Gon, but they're the Olam. And this represents a certain hashkafa with Rishonim and also a certain Achronim we see as well. If everyone does things in a certain way, and it's always been done this way, and shuls do this, and good shuls, and everyone, so that means that it's okay. And it's a halachic force. Because that means that this has had the sanction of all the rabbis for all the generations, and we're not aware of any other minhag. This is minhag ha'olam. That's a very affirming perspective on what's called minhag ha'olam. Some people look at what everybody does, and they're sure that there's something wrong with it. They just need to look into the halach and find out what that problem is. But we see from Rishonim that if everyone does, your starting point should be the assumption that it's okay, that it's good and correct, unless some overwhelming reason to assume otherwise. Minhag ha'olam is a force in a halachic argument. And therefore, based on these three questions, quite different from each other, but all heading to the same conclusion, the Rosh concurs with Rabbeinu Tam that indeed the first Shem Hashem is also one of the Midos, before and after, like the Gemara says, they're numbers 1 and 2. And that's the position of the Rosh. I'd like to move from the first of the Midos to the last of the Midos. And see one or two very interesting questions. The last of the Midos, of course, is Venake, we know, right? Perkid of Nosi Oven, Ufeshe V'chata, Venake. And that's that. Venake means to cleanse, and that's a Midah of Rachamim Hashem. Now, we should note that if you look at the Pasuk, the word Venake is the beginning of a phrase. And the phrase reads, Venake lo yinake. And that actually seems to almost have a contrary connotation to Venake. Because Venake means that Hashem will cleanse, and Venake lo yinake sounds like it's a elaborate way of saying that he won't cleanse. Venake lo yinake. So what does this mean? Rashi comments on these words, says, Lefi pshuto, the simple understanding of this phrase, Mashma she'eno mevater al ha'avon legamre. Hashem doesn't overlook an avera completely. Venake lo yinake. He doesn't completely overlook it. Ela nifra mimenu ma'atmat. But rather he exacts retribution bit by bit. Venake lo yinake. He's not going to completely overlook it, but bit by bit, incrementally, it will be dealt with. That's the pshat in Velakene. But then Rashi quotes Rabbi Seinu Darshu, quotes Chazal, again the Gemara there in Rosh Hashanah Yud Zayin, that Venake and Lo Yinake are actually two contrary messages. Venake means he'll cleanse, Lo Yinake means he won't cleanse, which really contradict each other, and therefore what's the resolution? Rabbi Seinu Darshu, it all hinges on whether you do tshuva. Could go either way. Menake hu lashavim, v'lo yinake le'enam shavim. If Rabbi Eliezer says this in the Gemara, if one does tshuva, then venake. If not, lo yinake. That's how he. And therefore, we obviously finish with venake. We don't want to mention lo yinake in the midrash Sharachamim. Now, we should note and feel that the drasha is very different than the pshat. I mean, it really seems to run together as one phrase. Venake lo yinake. It's really one continuum, whatever it means. To split it up into two and see this as opposing things and then to resolve them, which is drash. But Rashi quotes it. Not only do we follow that practice because we end with the word venake, but Rashi quotes it. But why not just leave it with the pshat? I mean, where is this drasha coming from? It's important to ask this question. But as we know, Rashi will often bring Medrash Rabbi Seinu if there's something about the pshat that doesn't quite work out. That's not so straightforward. To read Venake lo yinake is not so straightforward, I believe, for a number of reasons. Firstly, the word Venake means to cleanse, but Rashi in his pshat does not translate the word Venake as cleansing, but rather as mevater, to overlook. Overlooking and cleansing are not the same thing. In order to, so to speak, make it work, according to the pshat, Venake lo yinake means Hashem will not completely overlook the sin, But the word vinaka doesn't really mean to overlook. It means to cleanse. And there's no reason why he should not completely cleanse the sin, you know, if given the right circumstances. So that is point number one. In order to allow for a pshat understanding, we have to deviate really from the simple understanding of what the word vinaka means. There is a second point, which I think is also relevant, and that is this kind of expression, something not something, something low something. So Rashi says it means that he won't do it completely. But we've already seen in the Chumash this type of grammatical form, and it doesn't mean not completely, it means not at all. In the end of Parshas Shemos, Moshe goes to Paro and says, things have only gotten worse from the time I came to Paro. From the time that I came to Paro to speak in your name, he wrought evil on this people. Now, what is the meaning of that? Ibn Ezra explains, he doesn't mean to say, and you haven't delivered them absolutely, because that's a high expectation. You haven't delivered them completely. Moshe's point is you haven't delivered them at all. So the absolute element is focusing on the low, means you've absolutely not delivered them, even slightly. That's what v'hatzelo etzalto means. But then if transpose that into v'nakelo inake, it doesn't mean, it sounds like the reference isn't to that Hashem won't fully nake. It sounds like he won't do anything. Like v'hatzelo etzalto, at all. V'nakelo inake, at all. But that's not how Rashi explains it. Rashi says it means you won't do it completely. So the absolute element has been shifted from absolutely not to not absolutely. And that's also not so straightforward. And that's why I think there may be well be many more reasons, but the two that I think are easy to detect, that's where Rashi says there's something about this phrase. You can begin to get a sense of why the Chachamim said that v'lakane nakale nake in this context really are two opposing concepts depending on tshuva. We'll just conclude with for a final one or two moments with a fascinating comment of the Bnei Sosfar, the great Tzvi Elimelech of Dinov, and he draws our attention to a tradition that many quote, that the Yud Gimel Midas Shel Rachamim are parallel to another set of Yud Gimel Midas, of 13 Midas, namely the Shlosh Yisrei Midas Shatoran Idreshes by him. Rabbi Shmuel's 13 Midas, just before Psukei de Zimra. And there are many parallels, and the point is that involving in one of the Midas that the Torah is in Idreshes by him can activate the corresponding Midah of Rachamim. That's how the Mefarshim explain. Now, the final Midah of Rabbi Shmuel is so the two psukim, they contradict each other until the third pasuk comes in. And that's the 13th midah of Rabbi Shmuel. And how does that relate to the 13th midah of Rachamim? Well, the 13th midah of Rachamim is v'nake lo yinake. That's shnei ksuvim hamakishin ze'etzeh. Those are two conflicting psukim. But the question is, where's the third pasuk that resolves them? Well, the Zohar Kodesh says that corresponding to the Yud Gimel Midos are the Psukim in Micha. Mikael Kamocha, Nosi Oven, Vavra Pesha. If you have a look in the Machzorim and Tashlich, on top of those words are Hashem, Hashem, Karachem, Vachanan, because of the correspondence between them. Which means that, and the final Pasuk there is Titein Emes Liyakov, Chesed Avram, Asher Nishpata Laveseinu, Mimei Kedem. The words Mimei Kedem are on top of the word v'nakeh. They're the 13th midah of their Micha, and they're on top of the 13th midah. But what's Mimei Kedem got to do with anything? Well, the Gemara told us that the resolution between these two conflicting psukim, is it v'nakeh or lo yinakeh? It depends on tshuva. The Gemara says tshuva was created for the world. And therefore Mimei Kedem in Micha is a reference to tshuva, and that's the kos of Hashlishi, Sheyechriya Beinehem. Okay, we'll leave it over there for a second. Thank you.